Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Complete your staining project with Pittsburgh Paints and Stains, now at Menards. Stain in one coat with Ultra Advanced Semi-Transparent Stain. It's a stain and sealant in one that can be applied to damp wood and on hot, sunny days, allowing you to clean and stain your deck in one day. Save big money on Pittsburgh Paints and Stains and head into Menards to get your staining project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to another intriguing episode of All Things Mysterious, the podcast where all the realms of true crime, supernatural, and the unexplained converge. I'm your host, Jordan.
I'm Matt.
We're ready to plunge into today's fascinating mysteries. Let's dive right in. I have one of the strangest true crime cases ever for you today. Maybe not in your book, because I know you can find some really oddball ones.
Give me 5 minutes.
It's all it takes for you, I know. But this one is just really odd. Without further ado, let me introduce you to the murder of Robert Wone.
Never actually heard of this one.
I feel like you might have once you hear more of the details, but it's a weird one. It's just weird.
I'll be the judge of that.
Fair enough. Robert was said to be just one of those obnoxiously nice people that just did nice things just because he was nice.
So like me?
No, you're not nice. You scare people every 10 seconds in the office just to scare them.
It's fun, though.
It is fun, actually.
To be fair, a lot of times I don't do it on purpose.
No, you do it on purpose.
No, not always. Sometimes it's actually an accident.
The first time, then you know they're jumpy, and then you do it just because.
I can neither confirm nor deny that.
Lies. Anyway, he was born in 1971, which made him 32 at the age of his murder. We will need to introduce another important person in the story, which is Robert's longtime friend that he made in college, Joe Price. They were really like-minded souls. In college, they actually made a club that the whole purpose of the club was just doing covert acts of kindness.
Like a loser club. What the heck?
It's not a loser club. I thought that was really sweet. I can't imagine that would gain them a lot of popularity, though.
Not in college.
But anyway, they did obviously keep in touch after they graduated. At the time of Robert's murder, they were friends for around 10 years. Robert graduated from the University of Pennsylvania in 1999 with a law degree, and then at that law office, he found employment at. He met his future wife. Her name was Catherine. They fell in love, and they were married in 2003.
The wife did it.
She was not even close to the same zip code. But yeah, I'm just giving background here. Just let me give background. In 2006, Robert decided, because he was just that nice person, he wasn't doing enough as a lawyer, and ended up working for a nonprofit organization called Radio Free Asia. So this is important because once he got this position, he had to go to a seminar for them in Washington, D.C. They lived a few hours away in Virginia, and both he and his wife thought that it was best for him to just stay in D.C. for the night instead of trying to travel back home, which makes sense. Just stay there that night, come back the next day. It'll be fine. There's no need to drive. Or I think he was going to take a train back that night. And they were like, it's fine. Don't worry about it. Just stay the night.
Yeah, just stay the night so I can come murder you and have a perfect alibi.
No, actually, his good friend, Joe, lived in D.C. So he reached out and he was like, hey, I'm going to be in D.C. for the night. And Joe was like, just stay here. It'll be great. And that night was when everything went wrong. Everything went horribly wrong. Around 9:30 p.m. that night, Robert made a call to his wife saying that he was on his way to Joe's house. Everything was fine. The seminar was over. It went well. And that he loved her. After that, we don't have much of a timeline as far as evidence goes, but according to Joe, he arrived about an hour later at 10:30. Now, more about Joe Price. Joe had two romantic partners living with him in the house, Dylan and Victor. They were in a polyamorous relationship, and they had been for quite some time. Richard was well aware of this. He'd known them for years. He was all for it. When he got to the house, he supposedly spoke to Joe and Dylan in the kitchen for a while, and Victor stayed upstairs. Now, so we understand how the house works, because it's the way this murder works, it's just weird. The house has three stories. Victor and Joe shared a bedroom, and theirs was on the third floor. Dylan had a separate bedroom. His was on the second floor. And Robert's guest bedroom was also on the second floor. When Robert got there, they were all in the main floor in the kitchen, just talking, except for Victor, who was in the bedroom. And then around 11 p.m., they all went to bed. Around 11:30 that night, Joe and Victor heard moaning sounds from downstairs, which would have been just a floor below them, and rushed down to see basically that Robert had been stabbed to death. They went in there. Obviously, they saw that he had been stabbed. They called 911, freaked out. They're freaking out, woke up Dylan. Dylan came in, and they called 911. This is where things get extra weird. Paramedics arrived, and he was already dead. So this is pretty quick. Robert had been stabbed three times. But this is what's real weird. One of the paramedics noted that immediately it just looked off. She said it looked like he had been, and I quote, stabbed, showered, redressed, and placed in the bed. He was stabbed three times, but there was almost no blood on him except for a couple small spots underneath him on the bed. It gets even better from here, believe it or not. Obviously, they took the body back and the medical examiner got to take a closer look. He also had been sexually assaulted, strangled, and my personal favorite, they found several needle marks on his neck, hands, feet, and torso, but nothing came up on the toxicology report.
That doesn't necessarily mean anything.
No, it just means that whatever, if he was injected with something, if he was, presumably.
One thing I learned about toxicology reports, especially medical examiners, they don't really test for a whole lot.
That's what I was going to say. You have to run very specific tests.
And unless they know there's hundreds of thousands of different possibilities it could be, so they're not going to be able to run a test for everything.
Exactly. I would think that knowing he didn't have any signs of struggle and knowing what the crime scene looked like, I would think they would have ran tests for anything that would have presumably made him immobile.
Yeah, that's still...
It's a very vast array of things.
And I forgot, I know that there's several things that even if they would have tested for, it metabolizes so quickly that it wouldn't have shown up in a toxicology report.
And there's just the scene. It's so bizarre. It's just weird. And thinking about who these people were, at least according to everybody that they'd known up until this point, I really don't have any background on Dylan or Vincent. Because for whatever reason, no matter how much I really look into them, there's really not much known about the two of them. All I really could find out about was Joe, because he was obviously a lot closer to Richard. But what the crap?
It's either they're all involved, or Dylan's involved himself, or his friend and Joe, or what is Joe and Vinta?
Yeah.
They're involved and Dylan's innocent, or...
Oh, I'm sorry, Victor.
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 But obviously one of them's one or multiple of them are involved.
You would think so. And it gets even stranger to me. I looked up the 911 call, and at some point, I guess Victor made it. And the word choice to me is odd. Now, I say this as someone with autism and ADHD and a crap ton of anxiety, but the word choice is just odd to me. He said, "We had someone in our house, evidently, and they stabbed somebody." So immediately he's putting blame on somebody else and immediately throwing words out there that somebody else did this. And he's not even saying that they're dead. He's just saying somebody was stabbed here and somebody else came in and did it.
Suspicious.
I'm not the only one. I'm like, okay, that's just sketchy to me. I would think if you came to find somebody stabbed, you'd just be like, oh my God, something's wrong. I need medics here now. Something's happening. That's just me. I don't know. I've not, thankfully, ever been in that situation.
What year was that?
That's a really good question. 2006, I think. I think it was 2006. Yeah, 2006.
To play devil's advocate here, it wasn't exactly the best time to be gay in 2006.
No, it wasn't. That's entirely fair.
It could have been a defense where he knew that they would have been instantly suspects, but...
And to be fair, I believe they were. Which I think, regardless of their relationship and living situation, I think they would have been anyway, just because of the situation, but especially because of them being gay and being in a polyamorous relationship, I think they would have, but especially because they were. But then you add in that he was sexually assaulted. And to me, that just makes it look even worse for them. That's just my opinion, but it does.
And that, I mean, when you get into stuff like that, it's...
At least...
It's straight guy...
Cop or detective mindset, that's where I would go.
Yeah, but psychologically, sexual assault mostly is not necessarily about the sexual part of it.
No, it's a power move.
Yeah. And it has been, straight men have sexually assaulted males before.
Yeah, of course, they definitely have.
And if honestly, if you're trying to get away with murder and you know that he's in a house full of gay guys, that I don't know, it's almost too...
Predictable?
Yeah, it's almost like too perfect, like too much evidence is pointed.
That's fair.
Because you have the mindset to try to clean up the crime scene, which really is stupid unless you're going to get rid of the body.
Yeah.
So why would you clean up the crime scene, clean up the body, and then still call the police to report the...
I told you it's really weird, but there's another really weird detail I'm about to tell you about. And I can't wait to hear your opinion on this one because I even added it into my writing. But when EMS got there, all three men, not Robert necessarily, but all three of the other men were all in white bathrobes. And nothing else. And I had two distinct thoughts about that one. And I want to see if you had the same two distinct thoughts that I had on that.
On one hand, sleeping naked isn't necessarily weird, but the fact that they have white makes it overly theatrical. Like saying, look, we got white robes on. If we would have killed them, there'd be blood all over the room.
That's exactly where I went with the white. My other thought was that Robert had appeared freshly showered. So I was wondering if they had literally just gotten freshly showered.
Yeah, but then I think they wouldn't say so that their hair looked wet or...
It's definitely possible to shower without getting your hair wet, though.
Yeah, it is, but...
Trust me, girls do it all the time. Not every day is hair wash day.
Yeah. But still, even if you take a shower, you're not going to get completely dry. That's why you put a robe on. There would be some kind of evidence that they were... I think if the paramedics are that... noticing these little things, they probably would have noticed if they just got out of shower.
You would think, but supposedly Robert also had taken shower before he went to bed, so the shower would have been wet, so that wouldn't have been a giant...
No, I'm not saying the shower, I'm saying
that them, I don't know. It depends on how long they would have waited until they called, if they had. But I did 100% agree about the robes being white, because to me, that's a giant red flag. Look, our robes are white. If we did this, there would be blood all over them.
But then you got the other question. They killed him and they cleaned him because obviously they're going to be suspect number one in that case. So then why report it?
And I think that goes back to, I guess, psychological standpoint. I bet if we call the police, it's going to look like we're innocent. A killer would never turn themselves in. If we call, we look innocent.
Yeah, I'm the complete opposite. Like, I don't even know if I'd report if I found a dead body because I know instantly I'm going to be suspect number one.
See, I'm exact opposite. I'm like, oh God, what if I walk by this dead body and they find evidence that I've walked by this dead body and I didn't report it? They're going to know. They're going to find some way. They're going to know that I did and I didn't turn it in. What are they going to do? They're going to know somehow that I walked by this and then they're going to think it was me.
But yeah, I've seen this thing. There's been a debate before about people not reporting bodies that they find. And on one side, it looks weird. But on the other side, especially if you get one of those cases that are like hard to solve, it's not exactly unheard of for cops to take the easy way out and be like, hey, you found the body. You probably killed him.
No, it's true. It really depends on the cops being good people and doing a good investigation. And you just have to hope and pray that.
But would you really want to risk it?
I would, because I have a conscience and I couldn't. But I have that conscience that would not let me go.
But if you found a dead body, let's say you found a body outside, by not reporting it, you're not actually technically hurting anything because someone will eventually report it.
You would think, but think about the evidence. If it was a murder, that would be wasting away.
Yeah, but you don't
know how. Justice that might be just getting quite literally washed away.
Yeah, honestly, if you don't know how long that body's been there. You don't know if it even has any evidence.
That's exactly my point. What if all of it's almost gone and I could have saved that one little tiny shred of DNA left?
All right, new scenario. You find a body in winter that's been buried under a snow pile.
Okay. That one. First of all, I don't know if that would ever happen because F snow. I don't F around in snow. Screw that business.
But so all evidence has been washed away. Body's been frozen, so you won't be able to tell when they actually died.
I still would turn it in. I have that conscience, that guilty conscience. I couldn't ignore it.
See, I'm not saying that I wouldn't be constantly thinking about it because I got anxiety anyway, so I would overthink it anyways.
You would 1,000% overthink it.
But my problem is I would have to put my trust in someone else.
Yeah, see, I couldn't do that. I couldn't put my trust in somebody else. But I would have to do it.
But that's what you're doing. If you call the cops, you're putting your trust in the cops that the cops are going to do their job and do the right thing.
But I would at least know that hopefully I have done something to help the person that was dead. And I know, obviously, they're dead, so there's not a lot of help going to them.
Yeah.
But I've done something more than nothing.
See, and I think that's why this is really, if you drill down to it, it's a dilemma. Because let's say you report it, and then the cops just don't want to do their job, so they instantly arrest you. Then you get charged for some reason, and it's obviously happened many times before.
Unfortunately, I'm sure it has.
You get convicted. And then you get the death penalty.
It'd be a really crappy case because, boy, howdy, am I the least murderous person ever.
Yeah, but I mean,
do I threaten throat punching a whole lot? Yeah. Have I actually done it before? No.
But that's just how my mind works. Is it, now you're going to put your trust in a cop that they're going to do the right thing. And I'm not saying cops are bad or anything, but it's just people in general. That's a lot of trust to put in somebody.
Yes and no. I also know, though, that I have location tracking and stuff on my phone, and I'm sure that for the most part, I could find a way out of it. Granted, my phone can't prove that I'm with it all the time, but at the same time, I'm sure that I could probably find a way out because I know that there's just no way I would ever kill a person.
I wouldn't either.
And I'm confident that there's pretty much no way I would ever be found guilty of a murder unless I actually did it.
Oh, but that's the other thing. You're female, so less likely for you to get the death penalty.
That is true. I do have that going for me.
And less likely to get convicted in general. But it takes a lot for me to put my trust in anybody. But now when you talk about my life, yeah, that's one reason these movies where, let's say, the father's daughter gets attacked or something and the cops don't do anything, so he takes justice in his own hands. I think that's why a lot of those movies resonate with a lot of people because
they don't have faith in the justice system, yeah. Which is fair.
Or not necessarily faith in the that's a whole other conversation, but I'm just talking about faith in people in general. Because I guess it's, I don't know.
And it boils down to faith in individual people within the justice system.
Yeah. Just faith in a broader perspective, just faith in people in general.
Yeah. There's not a lot of that either.
No. I don't know. I know this is a little tangent, but I just always thought that's always been like, now you get a glimpse of how my mind works. I'll think about something like that. And
how exactly opposite Matt and I really are, which is honestly why I think the podcast works quite a bit because...
See, but and that's ultimately, I can sit here and say that I probably wouldn't report it, but luckily I've never been in that position.
Samesies.
I don't ever plan to be put in that position, but I just, I don't know. Like, I really don't know what I would do at the time because I can see both perspectives and both sides of it. So I don't know.
It depends. Are we in Welch, Oklahoma, or are we in...
I guess it depends on where we find the body and if we've done an episode on their police department.
If I've been in a city or state, and it depends on where I'm at, because if we've done an episode from that place and I know that the police are just going to be like, eh, I'm going to be like, I don't know about it.
I have met some of the detectives here on the police force, so I'm not too confident.
We'll just have to see.
I guess it would depend on, and I wouldn't even know that information, but I guess it would depend on who got assigned the case, but... You can't always predict that.
All right, back to the actual. Obviously, the police did actually, and I'm proud of them for this, because they really did a pretty good job of looking into the actual investigation, which props to them, because back then, like you said, being gay really was tumultuous, if you will. So they did actually check and see if an intruder coming in and murdering him was plausible, and it wasn't. They did have another roommate. Her name was Sarah, and she was not home that night, but she did tell the detectives that all the guys had a habit of leaving the door unlocked downstairs. Mistake number one, that's a possibility.
Where was she?
I don't know. She had an alibi, and it was pretty solid, but she wasn't any sort of, she wasn't looked into at all, aside from once she had an alibi.
You could tell this is an older story. Four young people live in a three-story house.
Oh, I know. Nowadays, it's eight people, maybe.
Yeah, in a one-story, two-bedroom house. That's all they can afford.
Yeah. Yes.
In Washington, D.C., nonetheless.
To be fair, several of them, I believe, were lawyers, so they could afford it.
I don't know. I don't think it was hard for a lawyer to avoid.
Anyway, they were on the second story, which is why I said it was important to know where they actually were at in the house. They didn't have, I don't believe, a fire escape or anything. They did check to see if somehow they could have broken in through the window. And they checked to see if the dust had been disturbed by the window or anything to see if there were any prints by it. Obviously, they did check elsewhere for fingerprints. They checked for DNA evidence down the drains. They had cadaver dogs come in. And the cadaver dogs actually did hit on two places within the house, not necessarily the house, because one of them was against the stairwell in the backyard, and they hit on the lint trap of their dryer, which made me wonder, did they commit murder and then wash their clothes out outside and then dry them?
Technically, they probably could have washed it, and then all the evidence would have just went down the drain.
But it didn't go down the drain because the cadaver dogs didn't hit them in the drain. They didn't hit on those places. They only hit on places outside and the lint trap. I don't know. It wasn't enough for them to make a conviction.
Yeah, because I don't know because a lot of those dogs are trained to hit on different things.
Cadaver dogs specifically are trained to smell where a cadaver has been.
Yeah. But they do have some cadaver dogs that are trained on bodily fluids. And they could have said it was a cadaver dog and it was actually a search and rescue dog or something.
That's fair. I would hope it wasn't just a search and rescue dog. Look what I found over here. But I will say, I believe the police actually did a fairly thorough job on this. I'm not sure if the police did it in an effort to try and convict them on it, or if they did it as an effort of being thorough or not, but I really feel like they did a pretty thorough job. However, all three men still say they are innocent. Now, there's another odd little side set here. There was a kitchen knife on the bedside table in Robert's room when they came in, but it did not match against his wound patterns. There is also a knife missing from their set, and the size and shape would match his wounds exactly. But that knife, supposedly that knife is at another of their homes in another state, but they never have produced it. But they never went to jail. There wasn't enough evidence of any sort. Because there wasn't. There's no evidence. If they did it, big if, obviously, boy, they covered it up incredibly well.
Almost too well.
And that's exactly what I'm saying. If they did it, that's creepily covered up well. But what gets me is, what's the motivation behind it? I don't understand the motivation. Nobody gets the motivation behind it. Like, eventually, Catherine, Robert's wife, did sue them all for wrongful death, and they just settled out of court. We don't know, obviously, for how much.
And that in itself doesn't necessarily mean they were guilty of crime.
No, it's just, they just settled. It doesn't mean they were guilty or anything. It's not saying that they were, they just settled. But I don't know. There's somewhat evidence against both things, or for both things. And one way or another, Robert still doesn't get answers. He ended up just murdered, and nobody has a clue. And supposedly, he was just this phenomenally nice, amazing guy who decided to more or less cut his salary in half to go work for this nonprofit organization just because he wanted to do more for people. And poof, got murdered.
That's suspicious to me in itself.
Honestly, yes. From everything that I have heard about this guy, it really tracks, because he just didn't like corporate America.
I don't get that, but it's not cheap to become a lawyer.
No, it is not.
I don't know if his family was rich, but if not, then he's probably got close to $1 million in student loans.
From what I understand, Kathy had a really good job.
Yeah, but still.
Both of them had enough, and it still paid well. It just was a salary cut. So they still would have been able to keep their heads above water with the salary cut. It just wasn't going to be nearly the salary he was making as a lawyer. And he still was a lawyer. He just wasn't going to be making the same amount of money. He was just going to be working for a nonprofit. And he felt like he was going to be able to be doing more for the people rather than, which is entirely fair because.
I'm all for that, but yeah, just.
I get it. Personally.
Pay your bills. Get your student loans paid off. Those things will follow you till you're dead.
Freaking student loans, man.
Be a lawyer, pay off all my student loans, and then do nonprofit or, whatever.
I don't think I could do it. It would depend on who I was representing, probably, but I don't think that with the place he was working for that he got a lot of choices.
I mean, to be a lawyer, I could insert one of a million different lawyer jokes and...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I think that's part of why. I think he wanted to be a lawyer to help people, and... It wasn't...
A lawyer wants to help people.
This dude was a whole different kind, man. At least that's what it seemed to be. And maybe that's not who he was to the core. Maybe they were completely different under the surface and nobody knew that. Maybe that's why he ended up murdered. I have no idea. Nobody truly knows. And that's the thing. Like, why? Why did he get murdered? Nobody has a freaking clue. It's the most bizarre thing.
Yeah, there's definitely got to be something.
That's exactly it. What was the actual motivation behind it? Nobody knows. Nobody has a clue. Nobody has come forward with any information at all. All three of the guys, Joe, Dylan, everybody.
You're ready for his name, didn't you?
Yeah, this is Vincent, I believe.
Victor.
Yeah, I don't know. I have it written down, but I keep wanting to call him the wrong name. I'm so sorry if ever you listen to this, because I even have it written down and I still keep calling you the wrong name, and I'm so sorry. But I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. None of it makes any sense, which is why I wanted to cover it on All Things Mysterious, because it's a mystery and it doesn't make any sense.
If it made sense, we probably wouldn't be talking about it right now.
That's correct. It doesn't make any sense. And at the same time, an intruder doesn't make sense either, because he would have to come all the way upstairs, murder him, shower him, clean him all off, put him on the bed, and then just leave. He's not taking anything with him. He didn't wake anybody else up. Did. And then also leave by the time anybody else found him.
See, I almost want background on the three, because another aspect, another possibility is that they were the target.
I wondered that too, if one of Dylan maybe was the target because he was in the other bedroom.
Not the target to murder. Target to discredit or basically make it look like they were involved in this.
Oh, interesting.
Not this, like they wanted to kill him, but they wanted to destroy their reputation.
Wanted to go down for it.
So it makes me wonder if one of these guys was a lawyer in a case that against another person who wanted...
That's fair.
...that lawyer discredited.
That's entirely fair. That's a good way to look into it. It's possible. It even could have been one of the people that Joe had represented or something.
Yeah, I think it could have been any one of them, or could have been...
But at the same time, he was in town for one night. They would have had to have known that last second opportunity. Here you go, boom.
Could have just been an opportunity.
Yeah, but they would have had to plan that, boom.
Well, but who's to say that the other roommate wasn't going to be the intended victim?
That's fair.
But she wasn't there, but they saw that this guy was, and they just used that as an opportunity.
It is just real weird. It's just really odd, and I still don't know what to think. I don't know if I think they did it. I don't know if I think an intruder did it.
See, that's the thing. It's almost enough evidence to kind of have the common person kind of be like, that person's guilty, but not enough evidence to actually arrest them.
Exactly. There's a lot of circumstantial evidence, and it sure makes the three of them look guilty, but at the same time, there's not enough.
See, the one thing that throws me off is that the fact that they called the police, called 911. Because why clean up the body?
And hide everything and then call 911.
That makes no sense to me. That's
exactly, because they could have just made him go missing entirely.
Yeah. That's why, honestly, I think my theory is, I think that's the accurate one. Just because I think it makes sense. It explains everything. The only thing, obviously, we're missing is the why.
Exactly.
But
I think that's what has stumped investigators, too.
If you're a detective in Washington, D.C., look into the three, find out who would want to discredit them.
I would think that's probably your best bet, maybe. I don't know. But boy, this is one of those cases that it's not necessarily one that has been at the top 5 or 10, but it is something that sticks with me because I feel like he didn't deserve that from what I know about the guy.
It really does sound like he was collateral.
It really does. And that just sucks.
Or the other one is you could be right that Dylan could have been the intended victim.
And that's what I thought, because from what I understand, I could be wrong here, but from what I understand, the layout of the house, Robert's room was further than Dylan's. And I'm wondering if it was an intruder, they thought that the guest bedroom would be the first one and Dylan's would be further.
Now the question is Dylan and Robert look similar enough to...
I don't think they do, but maybe it was dark. I don't know.
The other thing is,
we don't know how the actual attack went down. If it did, he didn't have any...
I want to hear more about the needle marks.
All we know is that there were puncture marks in the hands, feet, torso, and neck. So it appears as though most likely something was injected, but we have no idea what it was.
And that's also how, you know, people who are addicted to drugs will try to hide their addiction. I don't know if there's older puncture marks.
And these all said they were new, so I don't think so.
The other thing is, I think I've seen this on an episode of NCIS or CSI or something.
Yes, because those are all very accurate.
Well,
but no, I get it. Those things are true. They'll put them, between their fingers or something and between their toes.
Yeah, because most medical examiners aren't going to find that.
Yeah.
Which is surprising me that this one did.
Honestly, I think that they were all just looking for anything and everything they could, which honestly surprised me too, because I would think it would be difficult to find tiny little needle marks, but I don't know, maybe big needles?
You'd have to use a magnifying glass and basically go over every inch of skin.
But that almost made me wonder if they were, almost after death, because then the skin wouldn't heal.
If it was right before they murdered, it wouldn't heal anyways.
At all, because that would be a lot easier to see, too.
Yeah, but then you got the question of why.
And there's all the why. I mean, the whole thing is just a why, a giant what the heck.
And I'm pretty sure they'd be able to tell if it was after death or before then.
But we know for sure he didn't fight back. He also was strangled. It's just none of it makes any sense.
Three different possible causes of death, three suspects.
Makes you think.
Yeah, I think it's set up somehow. Worse for some reason.
It definitely seems like it could be.
Oh, yeah. Look into the three, find out what cases, if they were lawyers.
Yeah.
Or what they were doing.
I don't think necessarily all of them were lawyers. I'll have to look back, but they all had exceptionally good reputations. None of them seemed to be...
But here's other flip. One of them could have been a witness.
It's true.
You discredit their possible murder suspect. Their testimony as a witness would instantly be negated.
It's something to think about. I don't know. You guys tell us what you think, because, boy, this case, it's an odd one. I told you it was a weird one. I told you.
I'll give it a...
Oh, no, here it comes.
It's mildly intriguing.
You know what? I'll take that. I'll take it.
I'm feeling generous today.
That's better than usual. I'll take it. Thank you for joining us on this journey through all things mysterious. Your engagement is what makes this so rewarding. If you've enjoyed uncovering these mysteries with us, please show your support by liking, subscribing, and following us on your favorite listening platform. For more intriguing content and ways to stay connected, don't forget to check us out on our links in the description below. Your involvement is the key to unlocking more thrilling mysteries.
As always, we keep you guessing.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.